You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from Los Angeles. I am Will Hines, and I was the guest on the previous episode, which means I'm the host of this episode because we do this in a La Ronde style because we are nerds. And my guest for this episode is Mr. Zeke Nicholson. Hello, Zeke.
Hello.
So Hi. Glad you could be here. Thanks for doing this.
Very happy to be here with you.
Now, everybody, Zeke is he's a member of the improv team Cardinal Redbird, who have a weekly show every Tuesday night, and they were a Herald team before that. Zeke is also a member of the indie stalwart Stars White Women. They're all black men, but the group is White Women because they have a sense of irony.
That
you guys, do you guys have a weekly show or monthly show?
We have a monthly show, yep.
Your token friend.
Second Friday at UCB Sunset,
yeah.
10:30.
They're an amazing group, and he's also on Baby Wants Candy in the improv world. In the non-improv world, Zeke is a writer for the upcoming television show AP Bio that's coming to NBC, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
That's Mike O'Brien's created that show, right? Another improv guy.
Yeah.
Although from I.O., so we don't recognize IO accomplishments at the UCB podcast.
In Second City. No.
They don't exist. And no. And you also were an actor on Take My Wife.
I was.
The Cameron Esposito, Rhea Butcher show on the now defunct RIP CISO.
Yeah.
So Zeke's done a lot of stuff. So, and I know Zeke because I was the coach of Cardinal Redbird when I first moved to Los Angeles 4 years ago. You guys were a brand new Herald team.
Yeah.
A couple of your members were from New York, so they knew me and they were like, come coach us. Which I was really glad for because I was brand new to the community and didn't know anybody. And you LA guys like yourself had to just go on faith that I wouldn't be a bad decision.
That's true. Yeah. You are an appropriate person to be having this conversation with because I would say that I learned quite a bit from you.
Ooh, exciting. Well, yeah. You already were good. So that's what I want to get into is some improv stuff. I think you're a great improviser and you always have been. But I'm sure like every improviser, some stuff came more easily than other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now you're like a total master. I think you can play any which way.
Well,
so I'm
you.
Curious to know which ways were easier for you at first and which ways were not as easy in your estimation.
Yeah.
So can you answer that already?
What
part of improv sort of came easily to you and which were sort of bumps?
Yeah, I think so. The thing that like the ability to sort of be a dynamic performer has always kind of come pretty easily to me.
Yeah, you got a lot of confidence on stage.
Yeah, I'm... is there a less lame way to say fearless? I suppose I'm not afraid of like eating shit, so I'll get out there and just kind of I think that tends to I have a sensibility that's like an eye for fun and that kind of stuff, which is great. But when I first got on HeraldNet, as you well know, the sort of like more technical aspects of gameplay and even sort of like being an active and dynamic straight man were a little bit more challenging for me. And so, yeah, it just took, at your behest, in fact, a very concentrated effort to like go through every scene that I was watching and doing and just being able to kind of like label the game. And it's initially it was a very kind of laborious process for me. It's like anything, those sort of mental pathways, those neural pathways are like, they just take a long time early on. And then the speed of that reaction gets going more and more, the more you do it. And now it happens like the game, it's not even I used to have to sort of like verbally label it in my mind. Like this game is like, what if a guy was slapping his brother in the face every day he woke up or whatever.
Right.
And now it like that happens so quickly that it's not even laid out.
You don't
out.
Have to detach
no,
and name it.
It's just sort of like in my bones and I understand the way the rhythm of it works. And yeah.
Well, but that's a really interesting and I'll say that I may have been your coach while you were going through that. But I don't actually consider myself that great a teacher of game compared to some people. I feel like there's been other, I always felt like Joe Wengert was sort of the master of summarizing the game of a scene fast, or Alex Ferney. I mean, I feel good enough at it, like in terms of being a teacher coach, but it's actually, I'm always learning it anew.
Yeah.
How to teach it. Cause I don't know a way to teach it. So let's get into it. Cause I feel like the problem of game oriented improv is it can be very cerebral.
Yeah.
It can remove you from the flow of a scene emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, their acting gets so bad when they start to worry about game, they force stuff that's not real because they think it fits into the math.
Yeah.
And they lose total touch with their own sensibility and tastes because they're thinking about it too much. So I think it's really hard. So I almost kind of feel like there's good acting, being in the flow, reacting, saying what somebody might say, being committed, and then there's being aware of this absurd pattern that's building, and they can be at cross purposes sometimes.
Definitely, yeah, I agree with that, and I think like the challenge is trying to figure out how to do both of them at the same time, concurrently and collaboratively, which is challenging. And I think like I don't know that this is always the maybe just because the game stuff, the left brain came a little bit later for me. I think. I'm not 100% standing by this, but I think I always start at a place of right brain, sort of like emotional, connected, and then kind of like allow the pattern stuff to develop. But I think here's what it is like early on, and this is something that when I coach, I try and focus on a lot. It's like people are very afraid. The problem with straight gameplay is that it becomes very rote and boring, and people get specifically afraid of the rest, right? And like and I think the rest is really where
like the real world of the scene.
Yeah, like that's where the sort of right brain stuff really shines. That's where your details and your acting and your commitment and the environment, all of that stuff really, at least in my opinion, kind of like that's where the life of the scene exists. And if you do that well enough, the audience then forgets even like what's the sort of button of the game that they're waiting for you to press.
So like if you get too concerned just with like making a game move, heightening that game, and you neglect the world that is surrounding it, it's so obvious what you're doing that all of a sudden you have to be a comedic genius to top yourself.
Correct.
Every line. Whereas if you're enjoying the reality around the game and having fun with the specifics and the emotions, you've bought yourself some time.
Absolutely.
You can play a little misdirect. The scene's going to be compelling somewhat, and then you don't have to be as amazing with your game moves.
Yeah, it's like there are a couple of analogies that come to my mind. I think like when people are still learning game, they get afraid to jump off the first lily pad of the game without knowing exactly where the second one lies, right? Like they're like, I'm not going to get off of this island until I know exactly what the next game move is. And so that's the thing that kind of causes you to sort of detach from the reality of the scene and like be in your head a little bit. But I think like more pro improvisers, maybe you disagree with this process or it happens differently for you. But for me, I'm like, I'm no longer afraid to just sort of step off that first island, knowing that my grasp on the game is strong enough that I will find a surprising one that will surprise not only the audience, but me as well. It's leaping and trusting that the net will appear, which is so stupid, but is real. And I think like, but people are afraid to do that because it's hard.
Let's restate it in terms of your personal experience.
Sure.
You got on Herald Night November of 2013 or whatever it was.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Good job.
And then, so you're excited. You're on Herald Night. You've been taking classes, doing improv. You're psyched.
Yeah.
And then what are the notes you're getting? Are you being told, Zeke, you're a good actor, you're bad at game? Did I say that to you? I feel like was that the impression you were getting? Bad at game, but you know what I mean? Like weak at it or something.
I think the note from you that I remember sticking out.
I honestly don't remember what I said.
It's very funny. Because it's
the pattern
my whole
one?
Life. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I do remember this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Will told me, you were like, so there was an established pattern and you decided, and you didn't play it. And I don't think it was, this is you speaking, you're like, and you decided not, or you didn't play it, but I don't think it was an active decision. I think you just didn't recognize it. Once you hit a certain level where you are a true pro, you can identify a pattern and then actively choose not to play it as a way to fuck with the audience and fuck with your team.
Yeah.
But you're not there yet. You're missing the pattern that's in front of you in favor of playing the fun.
That's a harsh note.
It was a very necessary note.
I must have liked you a lot to feel comfortable saying that, because that sounds... I must have just been like, Zeke is so good and confident that I can fucking lay some shit down. Or I had just felt so comfortable with the team at that point that I was speaking a bit more whatever was coming to my brain, you know?
Yeah, I don't remember it being a crushing note by any means, for what it's worth. But then I do remember very specifically, and this is a scene that Redbird still talks about, we were doing some, I think it was like Harold Late Night back when that was still going on, or maybe that's still going on. Anyway.
Harold Night's still going on, but... it used to be where you were supposed to do like kind of game, a team would get the whole hour.
Yeah.
And they were supposed to do like a very special kind of new sort of herald with
right.
it. And now it's just like, I think a mess hall team goes first and then a herald team goes second.
Yes.
And they just do a herald.
Got it. Well, Redbird was doing this group game and it was like a very clear pattern. The first person, it was like a Pillars of Light type thing. The first person stepped out and was like, ba da ba ba ba, I'm loving it.
Yeah.
And then the second person stepped out and was like, ba da ba ba ba, it's okay. And I was like, I see that pattern.
Yeah.
I get what the next move is. I stepped out and was like, ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I fucked your man. and it was a real, like, it was a huge laugh. And that was a moment where I was like, oh, yeah, I've now mastered what Will was saying. It's like, you, the minute you're good enough at internalizing the pattern, then you can make the comedic choice to break it.
For fun, yeah.
But early on, I was doing that, but it was not in control of it, and so I couldn't it wasn't useful or comedically useful at all.
We did a lot of stuff on Redbird of like naming games, like we went through like 3 weeks, maybe more, where we would spend the whole practice doing a scene and then we would stop and we would try to agree on what the name of the game of that scene was.
That's what I was going to say too. I think like gameplay in as I've come to understand it, is a sort of a dual process. Like it is a thing that you, the improviser individually, have to come to have your own understanding of, but it's also a thing that happens at the level of team, right? Like it's I remember pushing us being like, you guys have to have a team language for how to identify game. And so I think that was part of the reason I was able to learn as quickly as I did, was I had people that were individually very solid at it. People like Beth and Jake and Drew and Zach.
Yeah.
And they were, I think, able to then also sort of shepherd the team along into identifying this language. And I think it's funny when I watch teams now, I'm like, you guys just have to learn to just say it out loud together.
But I'll tell you this, I think ultimately that was a very fruitful thing for Cardinal Redbird. Like we ended up learning a lot about each other's sensibility.
Yeah.
It was tiring, and there were some practices that were definitely like no fun, not like bad vibes, just like tiring. I just remember being tired at the end of those because you're just thinking so much.
Yeah.
And you're breaking your own flow, and then you have to do another scene where you try to get back in the flow.
Yeah.
But it ultimately was good. Like it was like, okay, we walk out of that feeling pretty confident that we know what our agenda is in a scene. Not always, but pretty we feel good about it.
Totally.
So I say that was a positive experience, but I have had low success rate in doing that with teams.
Mm.
I've done that with other teams and it doesn't usually work as well.
Wow, interesting.
It puts people in their heads so much. They narrow their choices so much to fit into a formula that it takes more away from them than it gains.
Yeah.
Maybe I just haven't done it enough with another team to get like through, you know, maybe it's kind of like you go underwater for a while and then you surface with a new ability.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm actually looking back, I'm surprised it worked so well.
Yeah.
I think you guys had a lot of confidence to feel weak for a while, but then still be able to reconnect with your own sensibilities.
I think that's exactly the process. I think that sort of occurred for us and me specifically. I remember being like that my first year on Harold Night, it was sort of like it was your hit ratio is just so you're just inconsistent. I was like, I think back to that first year and being like, I hope this is a good show. I honestly don't know. Like it's so
you're about to go on stage.
Yeah, and now it's you achieve. Yeah, a certain level of mastery. I'm like, my baseline is just higher than the highest point was 4 years ago. You know, I'm like, I will never dip below a certain line just because I know how to do it at a
moment. But what you would do even in that first year, you specifically, was you would never quit. You would always add something to a scene. Mm. If we lost track of the game, right? Or if the scene's not working.
Yeah.
You were the player. Some people, they freeze.
Yeah.
They stop adding. They literally don't know they feel like there is a right answer and they don't know it, so they don't move.
Yeah.
But that the plane crashes if you do that.
Right.
And so you, and I think Madeline was one of these players, and Zach would always, everybody would be at different times, but very consistently, you three would, okay, well, I know that I'm a mom. I know that I'm a mom and this is my son, so I'm just going to get him ready for school.
Yeah.
Like, what is the business of the scene? Or I know I'm just going to have a point of view as a whatever, as a school principal who's dealing with an unruly class. I can just have a point of view that is reasonable. Forget comedy, that it is reasonable for someone to have.
Yeah.
You were good about very quickly having that. Now, then the ball's moving forward again.
Yeah.
And then you or somebody else might find a comedic move.
Yeah.
You had that always.
I think like that's the like troubleshooting version of what I feel is me at my best, which is like, and I don't know if you feel this process as well, but like if you think on the best scenes you're ever having, like it for whatever reason doesn't always happen, but like it is that thing of like you're so completely in the flow that the processes are happening at a level that is so above and
you're
beyond.
Not consciously thinking about
not
it.
Not at all. And you're just like,
you're feeling it.
It's almost like you're astrally projecting a little bit where you're like, holy shit, that part, like it's Michael Jordan is down there just like dunking and that is not me. I'm not in control.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like that lame thing where musicians be like, it's God is writing the songs. It's not me. And like, that's such a dumb way to put it. But it is almost
it
something like
that
where you're like, oh my God, it's.
Yeah, you're
it's
in the zone.
That level of there's like a it's like a subconscious sort of undercurrent that is completely taken over. And so I think like, in those moments where like the scene is kind of falling off the rails, it's I wonder if it's a bit of just like, well, here are the things that I know what it sort of feels like when I'm, you know,
in the zone,
NBA Jam on fire. Like, so, let me try and fake that a little bit, and at least some creation will occur.
You I don't know who taught it to you or how you had it, but you had that always.
Interesting.
You had the ability to say yes to the reality and be specific and interesting. You weren't just doing rote. Mom getting kid ready for school thing. Mm. You were interesting characters always.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily mean like huge comedic choices that we could build lots of scenes on. I just mean like you had POV. You had a point of view always. And I actually think that was the problem with Patterns and you early on, not just you.
No, you're right.
Because like patterns are not natural. Like, you know, if I mean, yes, patterns happen naturally, but whatever, to the degree that we want them to happen in a comedy scene is not natural. We want something to happen five times in a row within 2 minutes.
Yeah.
They don't happen like that in real life.
And I think you're right. Like a lot.
And so it's like if you're committed to the reality and your POV, you're not looking for that because it wouldn't happen 15 seconds later.
Yeah.
It's going to happen an hour later.
Exactly what was my problem. Yeah.
And you have to force it in addition to having good POV, being specific. And you got to be like a hybrid engine. You got to be electric and gasoline.
Right. I think that's another note that I remember you giving me also being like, okay, I get that was – you were really locked in on whatever it was you were doing. But you have to, especially in the Herald more than anything, that is a far more pattern-based form than almost any other. You really
– The way we do it at UCB, it is extremely pattern-based. You got to initiate with a premise, meaning you got to create a setting, tell the other person who they are. Say who you are and at least hint at, if not fully say, an unusual thing.
Yeah.
To start. It's a lot. It's unnatural and it's weird.
Yeah.
Then you have to immediately switch gears and start playing the reality just like a reality. Be normal.
Yeah.
Relative to that world. And then also see every pattern that comes up. It's super hard.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating how different people's minds are just wired for different things and that's why there is such variation amongst styles and
because I'd say there was other people in your I'll say Andrew Hansen, one of your teammates, who's an amazing improviser and such a funny person. I would say there was a phase where he was the opposite of you. He wanted that game laid out nice and clear, or he wasn't necessarily sure of what to do next.
Yeah.
Andrew's great. He commits. He's like, I really do think he's a top level improviser. But I would say that in the formation days of Redbird, he was more likely to be the guy that would wait and maybe not make a choice.
Yeah.
When the path was foggy. You know, it's the complement of those two personalities that make a good team.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, that is one compliment. I think Beth Appel also is a pretty...
Yeah, Beth's very game. You know, she's awesome at game. She does not need a lot before she can find a really good game and heighten it. But in those scenes where there is nothing, she'd be more likely to lay back and wait. And, you know, especially in those days, I don't know if she might not play like that. Redbird, I think, has reached the point where they've had so many good shows behind them that you can play in almost any, however good the scene is, you guys are going to enjoy it.
Yeah. I remember Beth early on in Redbird I think we still kind of maintain this a bit of a fundamental disagreement on how improv functions, but like she would initiate moves that would require a specific reaction.
Yeah, they're written almost. She's doing good sketches.
Uh-huh. And I would not give that to her. And she would be like, no, I initiated very clearly for you to be the unusual one. I was like, well, you can't do that. Like, you can't pre-write my move for me. And I, to this day, think that she would say, no, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And
I can see both sides of that.
Yeah, I think
right that the highest percentage success rate would be for the person to fulfill that role. Assuming that Beth is good.
Yes.
And that she's laid out a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should do it. If you're playing with a great jazz musician and they lay out a certain kind of beat, you should fit into that beat. They're good.
Right.
But it's still jazz.
Yes. Yeah.
You don't have to.
And
part of being a good player on everybody's side is being ready for stuff to not go what you think.
Yeah. And I think that was a thing where it took me learning to like, all right, understanding her language a little bit in terms of like giving her what she needs and then finding my way to still feel like I'm creating in a me version. And also her learning to be like, he's not going to give me what I want every time. And I think that was, because in my opinion, like you're right, there's the high success rate probably does come from sort of like technically correct. But in my mind,
but not
also,
100%.
And also, every time, you're cutting yourself off from that next level scene, which is just complete organic, surprise.
And I want a fully engaged Zeke Nicholson.
Right.
And if it's going to take you out of the scene to follow what feels like a prescribed script, that's not worth it.
That was a big problem for me early. And I think the things that would cause me to detach would be like, I know what move is next. I don't want to make it. But I think that goes back to I wasn't doing the other shit well enough yet. That game to me felt so constrictive and not fun. Like the patterns were just like, it felt like it took away the magic of the creation for me a little bit. And so
there are some scenes that when you title it with a game, you're missing part of the fun somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it is a weird alchemy of, it's not just what if a guy slaps his brother in the face every time he wakes
perfect
up.
Perfect scene.
Perfect premise, yeah. Sometimes it is that it's that this particular actor is playing an alpha person, and that human being, the actor, doesn't look like an alpha person.
Yeah.
And so the game is that, like, Drew Spears is, you know, who's like a very liberal, intellectual, verbose, smarty pants, lefty blue state guy, if he is playing an alt-right Steve Bannon bully,
right,
it is funny because it's him.
Yes.
And the game, labeling a game doesn't necessarily get at that. Some of the game is, what if Drew Spears was a bully?
Yeah.
You know?
Andrew Hansen, big mileage out of playing frat
boy. Of course. Andrew Hansen, who walks around and feels like a youth pastor everywhere he goes, is my absolute favorite high status bully character.
Yeah.
Like, I've cried. I think I told you about it. I saw an indie show where Andrew played like the most aggressive Broadway diva. Maybe I'm going to tell you now.
Great.
I saw this indie show. Andrew and Zach Olson were doing Tuprov, and Andrew played a Broadway diva. I don't remember her name. He had some name, and he was like the star of some, like, Book of Mormon or Wicked or something. And Zach was a new actor in that production. And Andrew was dressing him down backstage, being like, look, you're going to fuck me in between scenes if I need it for inspiration. And Zach's character was like, no, I'm not. He's like, yes, you are. I gave a blowjob to Roger Boones in between the first two scenes of The Producers or something, like a horribly graphic. But I remember the name Roger Boones. And he was, I think it wasn't a blowjob. He had sex with Roger. He was bragging that he had forced Roger Boones to have sex with his character. I don't remember. But it was so insanely high This is like the second scene of their set.
Yeah.
Upstairs to the clubhouse, and there's like four people in the audience, and I was one of them, and I had tears in my eyes.
That's great.
Because it was Andrew.
He does the most brilliant, like, sort of emotional building. He's like the best person I've ever seen do that. Like, he, and the audience just like loves that ride. They love to watch him get like more and more and more riled up. And he's such a good actor that by the, he's like freaking out. He'll be like spitting on people. Yeah. And like, the audience is just going nuts.
He gets there.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Alyssa.
I'm May.
And we have a podcast called Crazy in Bed.
Crazy semicolon in bed.
Yeah, this isn't a sex podcast. We mean like we're crazy and we spend a lot of time in bed.
A lot.
Yes, we have new episodes coming out every Monday on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.
Please subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Please listen.
We need this. This is all we have. We are fragile.
We're fragile and we could relapse.
Hanging by a thread, I'd say, but there's no thread, really.
No, threads are too strong.
Hey, improv fans, if the suggestion for your next show is beer, maybe initiate your scene with something like, check it out, they've got Bronx beer on tap at this bar. It's the start of a great scene, and ordering a Bronx is a great way to start any night out. And Bronx is now the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information, and be sure to make your next pint a Bronx. And scene.
Tell me about white women's evolution. I feel like you guys have also become a really great improv team. And when you started, I think you guys were pretty green, I think, especially not totally green, but like you've come a long way.
Yeah.
You were always funny, smart people who liked each other.
Yeah.
The shows were always good. But you looked like an indie team when you started. And now to me, you guys look like a force.
So it's funny, like my... The thing that I would say is, like, I learned so much. I was very lucky to have Redbird and White Women happening kind of concurrently for my growth as an improviser. I think my role on the two teams is drastically different. I am on Redbird a, not total, but, like, my job is to be a sort of agent of chaos. Like, when things are sort
break
of
break the
slow,
pattern if you think it's boring.
Exactly. Break the pattern, just kind of...
play with the reality if that's all we got.
Yeah. Whereas on White Women, my job is much more to be the, like, keep things on the rails.
You justify a lot on White Women.
A lot.
You take a funny pattern and you give it a context.
Yes, and a lot of straight manning. But that's, you know, it's a personnel thing. You've got Iffy and Lamar and Carl, who are three of the funniest but also craziest people ever. It's like you have to... you've got to make, just like continue to make sense of everything. And I think like White Women, the thing that was really great was we came together about 6 months before Redbird was formed. But the thing that was great was we got so much amazing kind of high level performance opportunity right away. Like we had one initial round of submissions. And then from then on, I think it was a bit of the indie scene had not really... There were no teams of color really at that point, which is so crazy. It was only 6 years ago, 5 years ago, but
four and a half, I think.
Yeah, you're right. But it like truly feels like a different era because the indie scene is totally super diverse now.
I mean, you guys were part of the reason it changed.
I think that's true. Yeah,
and it was, you know, that change is still happening. Certainly, it's not like done or whatever.
Yeah.
But like whatever wave of change we're in the middle of was starting. Then.
Yes. Yeah.
Like even 6 months before, I don't think it had started.
Yeah. I think that's
just the number
correct.
Of people of color on UCB teams in that time has changed so much.
It's, not even close to what it was. For the better. And I think White Woman's interesting too because we didn't.
I think Mike Still and Beth Appel deserve some sort of credit for trying to keep an eye on that. I mean, you know. Look, I'm a straight white dude from New England, so it's hard for me to speak what it feels like. So I guess I would ask you, but my question would be like, is it worth it to make those kind of changes? How can a community become more diverse? Just decide to, you know what I mean? It's one of those things that's hard to do it consciously.
Yeah, this is a thing.
But
that
if you, but it won't happen organically if you leave it to organic stuff either. So what do you do?
I think you do. It takes people at the highest levels being active and being okay with taking a quote unquote step back before taking a few steps forward. Like I think you do. There's got to be that time where you're like, okay, we're going to advance some. Because of the nature of the demographics and the way that this theater has been set up in this school, like we are a little behind in terms of having students of color come through. And so as a result, we have to just accelerate them a little bit. They might be, and I think I was even kind of in this crop of people, like a little bit green to be on Herald Night right away, but hoping that they will develop quickly and that will kind of bolster the pipeline where more and more students of color are coming through. And so I think like early on, it was the problem of like, well, yeah, we want to put more people on teams of color, but they're just not as experienced. And that was true, but it will never change that way. You know, it also takes.
It's a vicious cycle.
It really is.
Improv is so much about your point of view, your experience, and it's also about confidence. And so if you identify with the people on stage for any reason, race, gender, personality type, comedic sensibility, if you identify with the people on stage, you feel confident.
Yeah.
You're like, I belong there.
Right.
And that's going to get you through your time as a student where you don't quite know what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Because you're like, no, I fit in. I see it. I see myself up there.
Yeah.
It's not just race and gender, but that's a big part of it.
Definitely.
In other words, if it's all white dudes on stage, then there's going to be a higher number of white dudes who have that feeling of belonging.
And also secondarily—
So the numbers are always on that. So there's always going to be more people with experience.
Yes, and a higher number of white dudes making the decisions about who is on teams because the people that end up on teams—
They make it through the ranks.
They agree with the sensibility of the people making those decisions. And so it's like it takes—
You got to break the pattern.
Extra step of being like, okay, wait, am I laughing at that person? Yes, they are objectively— It's that fine line between like, yes, we have a set curriculum here about how to do it right. There are people that break that, and am I less inclined to like them because they are doing something slightly different? Does that have to do with—
Yeah.
My point of view, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, all that stuff. And it's just like, it takes somebody being like, I need to just slow down and think about this a little bit.
I'm going to risk being an old man and sound out of touch. And please correct me as you think. Yeah. I don't think that black people should be citizens. No, I'm only kidding. That's like I'm just trying to say the worst
twist. I agree with you.
Old-timey UCB, like 2004, somebody pointed out to me that in New York, there was nobody Jewish on Herald Night. Mm. Somebody said to me, there's nobody Jewish on Herald Night, they said. Isn't that weird? And I was like, what are you talking about? Yeah, there is. And then I looked and I was like, oh, no, there's not.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's weird. This is New York City. There is like a huge population of people who are Jewish in New York City.
Yeah.
And in comedy, we're not even talking white, black. We're not talking man, woman. We're talking like a very common cultural ethnic trait.
Yeah.
That's not represented. Isn't that weird? And once I realized, I was like, yeah, that is weird. I wonder why that is. And at the same time, Hot Sauce was an indie team, and this is Ben Schwartz, Adam Pally, Gil Azari. Now these guys are comedy superstars, outside of UCB and at UCB. But at this time, they were indie nerds. Funny guys. They were alive, but they were just students. Nobody was on a team.
Yeah.
Maybe Pally was. No, I don't think Pally was. And they're an indie team. And the general consensus on Hot Sauce is that they were funny, but they're not doing proper improv.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they're too silly. Because Schwartz would like call shit out and like break the fourth wall. And
yeah.
Gil would be extremely silly and surreal. And so I was talking about it with somebody, and I was like, yeah, but you know, they're all Jewish. And they are, if you're looking to like have Jewish people on Herald Night, these three guys got to be the most likely ones, right?
Yeah.
And I was watching them do improv, and the first thing I noticed was they interrupted each other constantly.
Mm.
They constantly interrupted each other. Now, when you're teaching improv, interrupting is one of your sort of barometers of bad listening.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, if you interrupted, you weren't listening. But I thought about it. I was like, yeah, but they're definitely listening to each other.
Yeah.
Like they're so on the same page. It's like one of the main strengths of Hot Sauce is that they seem to be able to read each other's minds.
Yeah.
So I've made this leap. This is the part where I sound out of touch.
Great.
I was like, maybe Jewish families in New York interrupt each other.
Mm.
Maybe that's just part of the culture. Like Italian families, Jewish families, I think Chinese families, they just talk constantly. I come from a white New England family. We don't speak to each other.
Yeah.
We have like one conversation a year.
Sure.
You know, but maybe if you're a Jewish family in New York, you're just yappity, 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 yappity. So you are listening to each other.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe this is the cultural difference. A bunch of white dudes from New England are picking the teams. They see these three Jewish guys interrupting each other. They're like, bad improv.
Yeah.
No, it's not bad improv. You got to just change your brain a little bit. And these guys are actually great at improv.
Yeah.
Or good enough. You know, and that they're doing all the fundamentals right. It's just a slightly different flavor than you're used to.
Absolutely.
And I think that's an isolated example of that times 20 is how you're looking at somebody who's playing a little different for whatever reason, race, gender, sensibility, and you think, oh, they're bad.
Yeah.
They're not bad. Maybe they're finding a new way to do it.
Right. Yeah, I think two thoughts there. I think 100% that's what, like, why I love being on White Women is that we do have access to, it's just stylistically, specifically, comedically just different. And it kind of engages me in a different way beyond the sort of like straight man, crazy man kind of business. It's just like there's a tone to it that is unique and different. And I think like really allowed me so much freedom to grow and experiment in a way that not no fault of Redbird. Like it's just a different,
no.
You know, it's a different space for me. And oh yeah. And what I was also going to say is like, I think that's a funny thing. Like there's always this, every generation of improviser thinks that they are the best one and that
yeah.
they are doing it right and
yeah,
that
yeah.
everybody else is dumb. And also every geographical location of improviser
yes,
thinks that
yeah,
thing
yeah, the New Yorkers think LA is no good and LA thinks New York's
Chicago,
no good.
All that shit. And
yeah.
I think like, yeah, I think I
Get
do
over
not
yourself.
Think that way. I have
yeah.
great respect for, even working on AP Bio was really cool because it was like Mike and
Chicago
Gossman, all these people talking about these sort of second city reviews back in the day and you know, totally different, I'm sure, stylistically
yeah.
completely different from
yeah.
what we're doing now. But I would never venture to say that, like, the way we're doing it now is right. It happens to be, like, yeah, what, how we're doing it. But I
yeah,
think
maybe there's, like, something different. Like, when I came out to L.A., now I'm speaking four, this is knowledge that's 40 years old, so I'm sure it's different now. But Harold Knight that I saw in L.A., based on having just moved from New York, and I wasn't watching a ton in New York when I left, so big grain of salt here.
Yeah.
But my gut impression was, oh, the LA teams are more dutiful about game.
Mm.
They lay out a more real reality and a clearer game by and large. And the New Yorkers are a little bit more loose with that, a little more absurd. And it makes the third beats more exciting in New York. And in LA, they're a little more rote.
Yeah.
But it makes the first beats more annoying in New York.
Interesting.
And they're better now. That was my gut. Lots of exceptions to that rule.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. But that was like my gut impression. Is that bad or good? Neither one, really. Like,
yeah.
I think they can learn lessons from each other. You know, like, I credited actually the venues. I think the Chelsea venue was so big and cavernous that
mm-hmm.
there was more separation from the audience. So you could do more surreal stuff. But in L.A., it's like they're right there.
Right.
They're not going to buy your bullshit. It's
yeah.
got to be a more grounded reality. Whatever the reason was, if I could easily find a reason to look down on either city
yeah.
for that gut impression.
But
no, why not just be like, hey, these are crops that have grown in slightly different soil.
Yeah.
Is that why I look down on either of them?
I think that also the audience reaction, it's the way that they react to certain things are like reinforce certain habits and sensibilities. Like I think the stereotype early on was like, yeah, New York, they're more, this is both a generational thing because a lot of the older improvisers were coming from New York. So
yeah,
maybe
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
representing that, but people like in your generation and
yeah.
you know, Casey, like they're grounded, they're committed.
Yeah.
They take their time to get to shit. And in LA, everyone's so worried about getting to the funny so quickly
yeah, yeah.
that everything is thin. It's very funny, but it's very thin.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And they never go dark because the audience doesn't want to see that. And so it is that thing of like...
Right, right. Yeah, there's a little less politically incorrect stuff.
Yeah, but
the New Yorkers come out here and they just want to be like, Jews, Jews,
right.
Jews, Jews.
Yeah. Kill some babies. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I don't know. I'm almost like, who's to say which is bad? Like, I would never deem to be like, the way that the Smokes, patient, grounded improv,
that's
the
bullshit.
Way they do it, it's bad. That's fucking crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's different from the way I do it. Like,
yeah. I think that's more of an age thing. Like, I think all improvisers, as they get more seasoned, they tend to go... They get old. They want to sit in chairs
yeah.
and have it go slower, good for good and for bad.
Right.
Like they want to evolve it more naturally and they want less premise. I think that happens. So I just think the people who came out from New York were the old dogs.
Yeah.
That the young dogs in New York are also more aggressive, stuff first.
But what is that thing like where people are, do you feel that way where you're like, there's a new generation, these people don't do exactly the way that I do it.
I have fallen victim to that.
And I don't think
so many times.
Yeah.
Heralds have gotten shorter in my time.
Uh-huh.
Like they were closer to 30 minutes all the time in the early 2000s, and they tend to be way closer to 20 minutes now.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, yeah, it looks more fake.
Yeah.
It looks more fake.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also better about game. They heighten better.
Yeah.
They're faster. They're probably on the same page more. You know, I got to look at it that way.
Yeah.
I'll notice it on television. Like on television shows, I feel like, you know, there's way fewer multicams. There's way more single cams. But there's also more like joke per minute on network shows, at least. Like kind of like 30 Rock stuff. And even The Good Place has like a lot of jokes per line. And you go watch like Cheers or Friends. They're not that old, but they're like the generation before. They're multicams, tons of jokes, but somehow there's more space because it looks more like a play.
Totally.
And the absurdity is less. Like they take place in the real world much more. And that's my shit. Like I miss that stuff.
Yeah.
But that's just an accident of birth. That's the shows I watched when I was a young man. So it got my bones. Now if I turn on and watch Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which is a great show, starring my friend Ellie Kemper. But it's like high octane, surreal, absurd jokes in a single camera setting. It's a different flavor.
Totally. I would say maybe I just am not removed enough from whatever the new generation of improviser is that like there isn't that shift that I can notice quite yet. I'm not like.
Yeah, maybe you need a couple more years and then you'll see it.
But I will say like.
But have you been to Herald Night? You watching Herald Night right now?
Not super regularly, but it still feels the same to me.
How long have you been off Herald Night? 2 years?
2 years, yeah.
Not that long.
And a lot of my peers are still, like people that I was in class with are still there. Yeah.
So like in 3 years, you watch Herald Night, it'll feel different.
Yeah.
Maybe not worse or better, but it'll feel like, oh, what is this?
That makes sense. I do have that thing of like, oh God, with like Instagram Vine type comedy, like short YouTube. I'm like, what the fuck is this? This is too, and I do have a real stick up my ass about like, in my day, sketches were 3.5 minutes long. Like,
yeah. Well, it is frustrating to me how effective memes are at communicating true emotions.
Sure, I love a good meme. I do.
Me too. I love a good meme, but as an old man, it is disheartening to me to see how well a GIF of Oprah Winfrey dismissively shrugging her shoulders communicates certain. It works.
It's so true.
It works, and it bums me out that it works.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Like. I never really, you know, I'm a verbal person, and I never really liked the tendency of actual human beings to trail off their sentences and finish just with a shrug. You know, someone will be like a normal person will be telling a story and be like, I went to work, and it was all like, you know?
Yeah.
And they rely on you watching their face and their nonverbal body language to understand what they mean.
Yeah.
I was always a snob about that. Inside, I'd be like, no, tell me.
Yeah.
Finish your sentence. Coward. Express yourself, you fool. But the world has been on the other side. The world is getting more and more nonverbal and more just like picture and emotion based. And I have to admit, it works.
Yeah.
People do understand what you mean.
Yeah.
Maybe better. So I'm getting snobby, not about the next generation of Herald Knight, but about the next generation of conversationalists.
Got it. Cool.
The whole human race is disappointing me.
That feels like a good hill for you to die on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll win that one.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, that'll end well for me.
For sure.
when you're coaching,
yeah.
What is it like to be coached by Zeke Nicholson? What do you like to do? If I'm an indie team and I'm like, coach us, what are you going to do first practice?
So first practice, I'm going to do a thing that I think actually Casey Fay, who worked with us right afterwards, would do, which is that like I think before you get to any of the technical, gamey, even character, like I think we got to start at that level of like, where are we at real-wise? Like, can you live in a detailed environment and make me believe what I'm seeing on stage? So I do these like sort of... I don't know the name for it, but it's like emotionally significant scenes, basically. And it's almost like not quite short form, but it'll be like, all right, Will and Zeke, you guys are going to do a scene together. You are two brothers. One of you is getting ready to go to college. The other has been to college. Just talk about like advice for things to look like.
Love that.
Yeah. Or
Kevin Malina or Jason Mantzoukas had us do a long time ago, and it was like important moment between birth and death.
Yes, great. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, just any important milestone moment between birth and death, you're going to do it.
Two best friends, one is telling the other that she just got engaged. Like it's and I yeah. and I do very specifically.
And it could be the first day at your first job ever. You're 16 years old, it's your first job. Yeah. So that's kind of exciting. So
yeah.
It doesn't have to be super high stakes climax as long as it has right. some significance for the people in it.
Totally. And like the parameters that I put on are no conflict, like no inherent competition. Like don't worry about any of that shit. Just like have two people who genuinely like being in the same space yeah. with each other and watch how much comedy can be derived from that.
Yeah.
And that's really fun also because it's cool to see like people just develop. And you need this. Like, you're like, oh, my thing is I do characters or, like, I do, like, big physical stuff. And, like, that's great. We can get to all that shit. But, like, in order for you to be an effective just baseline scene partner, like, yeah. we've got to see what's going on underneath there. So that's where I always start.
Okay. Now, I'll give you some other hypotheticals. What, yeah. what if it's a bunch of vets? They're losing fire.
Yeah.
But they haven't practiced in a while, but they're looking to have a practice, and they're like, hey, we need a fresh perspective. Come coach us.
Yeah, I might do some of the, like, what I like to call controlled chaos exercises, which are ones that are, like, yeah, if you're a vet team that's been around for a while, like, let's maybe inject some of that deliberately fucking with each other. So the thing of... I like that exercise that's like I would initiate a sort of innocuous thing to you like, hey, mom, is there any milk left in the fridge? And then you would respond what is ultimately a denial of like, oh, yeah, there's fucking milk in the fridge. But first we're going to talk about the dead body on the floor. Like, and then all of a sudden, right away, we're locked in a game, which is that I am the unusual character for caring about is there milk in the fridge when this hugely high stakes situation is happening in front of us. Right.
Yeah.
And that's a really fun thing that I like to do.
It's a good one. Yeah. Fun exercises. They need to be woken up and enjoy themselves a little bit. Yeah. All right. What if somebody comes to you and says, Zeke, I'm having trouble with game. My teachers are noting me that I'm bad at game.
Yeah.
What can I do?
I love to do an exercise that I stole from you, actually, which is the you wanted to see me, Mr. Blank and Blank.
So,
that one is you are painted as there's like a subordinate and a superior, and the superior lays out two things that fit within a certain world. So I'd be like, you want to see me, Fire Chief Johnson? Yeah. And then you'd say, you're doing a great job washing down the engines. You're doing a great job putting out the fires, whatever.
Yeah.
More specific than that. And then the third one is, but we've been getting some complaints that you're rushing into burning buildings wearing just your underwear on your head.
Okay. Yeah.
So clear, unusual thing, work to justify, and then kind of build from there.
Yeah, that gets all the ingredients out there pretty clearly.
I'm a big also like working on just premise lawyer. Just I think that in my opinion, not everybody would probably agree with this, but like the key, so many times when you come out of an opening, you're initiating, people make the mistake of initiating an unusual thing as if it's a complete game when in reality it's just a symptom of a larger game.
Yeah.
And the way that we get to that is by locking in on a point of view that is a little bit more universal. I'm big on like not taking the same initial angle of attack at the game. And I think the only way that you can vary that up is by getting to like, what is the sort of core human emotion underneath that? And the thing that I've found is that, and I tell all the teams that I work with this, it's like it's basically a cheat code. The longer you do it, you see the same types of human wants and needs that are kind of below almost all unusual things. The way you play each scene will be slightly different based on the specifics, but there are these like big kind of categorical things like chaos or order or connection, love, these sort of like big concepts that if you sort of explain your point of view based off of those, it just opens everything up so widely. That's a little abstract. But
I see it.
I think it is that it's like so many people should be like or like artistry or just these things that like are real emotions. Like if you can start your justification from there, it's usually will make the scene so much easier.
All right. A couple other questions.
Yeah.
Now they're not improv related, so I'm just going to surprise you with these.
Great.
Recommend to me some media.
Yeah.
Give me a book, a record, and a book, an album, a book, music, and a movie.
Great. The book I'm reading right now, I actually was just in Hawaii with Will Hines. No big deal.
That's right. No big deal. We just took a vacation. We're friends. We like do exotic things together. That's like right. Go to Hawaii. No big deal.
I'm reading a book right now. The first one's called The Passage by Justin Cronin. Really great.
Yep.
It's about a little apocalypse, a little, you know, 28 days later type
zombie
viral
stuff.
Zombie vampire. Sounds stupid, but it's great. I'm
okay.
Really enjoying it. Album, let's see, Lupe Fiasco's Food and Liquor, album
okay.
that came in about 2005, I think.
Okay.
It's great. It's fantastic.
Okay.
What was the third one?
Movie.
Let's go. My favorite movie growing up as a kid was Angels in the Outfield.
Okay.
Starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. and it's a great Disney movie. So
all right.
Go
I've
check
never seen
it out.
It.
It's
never,
fantastic.
I love baseball.
Yeah. It's good.
All
Christopher
right.
Lloyd, you know,
I
Danny
love Christopher
Glover.
Lloyd. Let's do a couple more of those. Recommend to me something I should go watch that I could go binge.
Yeah.
A TV series I can binge.
Mm.
And it can't be something you were on.
Yeah. Sure.
Doesn't have to be like just a good one. I'm not looking for the pressure of you to name the absolute
got
best
it.
One. Just give me some good shit.
I got one. Penny Dreadful. Have you seen that?
Never.
Ooh,
no.
I loved it. It's
yeah.
Victorian era, like gothic creatures from fiction that all sort of exist in this same world.
Oh, really?
It's fucking
that's
awesome.
Very like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
That's exactly
comic book.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
It's so good.
All
Eva
right.
Green is one of the most amazing actresses ever. Josh Hartnett, who was like a dumb playboy for a long time,
yeah.
is like really great in it.
Oh, cool.
It's a British, I think it was like BBC. I'm not 100% sure. But
it feels like it could have been,
it's
even
all,
if it's not
takes
officially.
It's in London. It's great. It's
well, that's very
yeah,
League of Extraordinary. I love League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the comic book. So
yeah.
It sounds.
It's like Frankenstein and Wolfman
Ooh.
And Vampire, all, but like very sort of dark and fun.
Penny Dreadful,
yeah.
Good title.
It's a great title.
Okay. And tell me an improv highlight for you the last one or two years. Give me a couple.
Ooh.
You can sound like you're showing off. I'm looking for you to like tell me some like stuff you're proud of. It could be
okay.
a show you got to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or like something that was cool. Improv-wise.
Yeah. I'd say like my last year has been really I was just recently added to Baby Wants Candy, which has been such a fun it's like I think with regular improv, I'm some version of the improviser I will be for the rest of my life. Like
mm-hmm.
there's just this, I'm pretty much up at the ceiling now.
Okay.
But with musical, it's still very, I was not a musical theater person growing up, so it's still very new to me. And it's that I'm more inconsistent in a way that I actually enjoy because it's a challenge to like get out there and sort of do it well and write every single time, and my
yeah.
hit ratio is not nearly as high as it is with regular improv, but I think I've come a long way in a pretty short period of time, and I'm liking kind of discovering it's stylistically so different, so much more theatrical, it's a lot bigger, it's sort of like that old Chicago style,
yeah.
and the musical, like kind of ingraining the way that the flow of the musical stuff works is really cool.
All right.
So yeah, we've done, I don't know, we did like a Shamilton at DCM to this massive crowd. That was really awesome.
Shamilton is where you do like an improvised Hamilton, but about a different
That's
figure.
That's exactly right. We did it about Shania Twain, and her nemesis was Mark Twain.
that's so dumb.
Really dumb, but super fun. And I was Dr. Dre in that show. yeah, it was great. So that was a highlight. What else? Yeah, but this is not, I mean, I've been doing a lot of Comedy Bang Bang too, which is not like proper improv, but it is in its own way.
I love Comedy Bang Bang. It's
the
great.
Best. Yeah. So I just.
It's also like being part of a cool community. Like everyone who does it is kind of fun and great.
Absolutely.
And if you're in LA, especially, it's like being part of an institution.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a podcast, so technically it's available everywhere, but to me, it's very like LA comedy.
It is, yeah.
Thing,
yeah. I just did my first ever live Bang Bang just last week to like 1,200 people, and it was fucking
That's
amazing.
Pretty rad,
it was
yeah.
so rad. That was definitely a highlight of my year. Yeah, I don't know. Redbirds had some really fun shows too, where we had one where we threw 40 chairs on stage in the middle of the show and then just left them there for 20 minutes and had to do the rest of our set just navigating this mess of chairs that we
oh,
created.
Really?
Yeah, that was really cool.
That's pretty fun.
It was like these women in a these like crazy women, and I think they were like some sort of support group, and the way that they expressed themselves was just by flinging chairs at each other. So
yeah, pretty no, that sounds pretty realistic.
Yeah, this feels very
that's
grounded.
That kind of grounded reality
that's
building
that old school
stuff
New York
you were talking
style.
About
yeah,
before.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That's
Neil Casey would be thrilled. I took a class with Neil Casey. He's an amazing improviser. I think I was not his cup of tea. And, you know, I get it. That's actually a thing that I appreciate about you, Will, is that you're the first teacher I've ever had that's very conscious about the fact that this is all bullshit. In the, do you know what I mean? You're like, I don't know why that scene didn't work. Fuck it. Like, there's,
yeah, yeah. I'm definitely quick to admit when I don't know something.
Right, but nobody else is, and that's so refreshing as a student because and you gotta have teachers that seem like they know what they're talking about. But
yes, I think yes. That's I am not that teacher. I'm the one that's like, this one. I don't know why that didn't work.
Yeah, but
two
that's
more.
A thing that I've taken from you. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
yeah.
Because you don't always know, and there isn't always a right answer.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. If you want credibility for the times that you do know, you got to admit when you don't.
Absolutely.
Because there's times when it's like, no, this I want. This we're gonna do. This yeah. one I know. This is like how this works or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I can't lie. I'm making up so much of it. But as a coach or a teacher, I'm coaching a Herald team now, Yeti, and I hadn't coached a Herald team since you guys. And every team's different.
Yeah.
And the things that worked for the last team aren't going to work for the next one.
Totally.
And you can try the old stuff as something to try, but you better be ready for that to not work the same way.
Yeah.
And there's going to be something new that's going to unlock the other team. And so you can't fool yourself into thinking you have it figured out.
Yeah.
Because you don't.
You sure don't.
No.
No.
Zig, I feel like it's good. Do you mind? I'm talking to the producer now. Zig, do you mind if we wrap this up? Yeah. Let's do it. Zeke. Thanks so much for being on the podcast. Is there anything that you were hoping I would get to that I didn't?
No, this was great.
You came in like a blank slate, just looking to be guided.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm so glad you did. You're one of my favorite performers, and you're a nice dude, and we went to Hawaii together. No big deal, just because part of a group of people go to Hawaii because we're exotic people and we live life great.
This would be a good place to say it. We hashtagged all of our photos UCB Turco Hawaii,
and
which
it was not a Turco.
People don't know as a joke.
Everyone thought it was real.
Everyone thought it was a real Turco.
We did not go to Turco Hawaii.
Nope.
I don't know why I thought that'd be so funny. I guess I pictured people being mad that they were left out of a cool Turco.
Yeah.
And then they would find out at some point that it wasn't a real Turco and
yeah.
they would feel dumb. But no one has found out that it's not a real Turco. They're just mad at us.
The best kind of joke.
Yeah, a joke that nobody gets. And even when you explain it to them, they're like, I don't
see
how that's funny.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it was so funny when we thought of it.
Well, because it was like you, me, Beth, and Dave Christensen. And it was like, why are these four people going on vacation?
Yep.
Like, yeah, we're friends. We know each other. But we're not like at going on vacation level
totally.
Friends. But it happened just because it was Hawaii and the timing worked out. So we did it. And I was like, it looks like we're a Turco group.
It does.
And everybody agreed with me because they think we went on Turco Hawaii, but
yeah.
we didn't. There's no Turco in Hawaii. Turco doesn't go to good places.
I think that's what it is that it presupposes you know what the sort of general geographic
range presupposes you know that Turco's not sending you to Hawaii. You're going to go to Fresno or you're going to
yeah.
go to like Spokane or
yep.
whatever. Or Spokane. I don't know how to say that city name. I don't care about other places. All right. Well, Zeke, thanks so much for being on it. This was a long-form conversation. Tune in to the next episode when Zeke Nicholson's going to be your host.
Yes, sir.
We'll see how he runs the show.
We'll see.
My name's Will Hines. You know me because I've been at UCB since 1971. thanks so much for listening, everybody, and have a good life. Goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.
Thanks to the Bronx Brewery, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, for their support. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all their craft beer. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx.